J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Girl, oh girl, you're looking so fine tonight, girl. And I told you I'd make love to you all night long.
All night long.
But girl,
girl, ooh, girl,
let's try to be realistic, girl. Nobody really makes love all night long.
That's impossible.
Though that would be impressive, girl. It's a little bit excessive, girl.
Too much.
And it would probably get uncomfortable to be that sexual.
Chafing.
And don't forget that we have work tomorrow.
8 a.m.
So we should really make sure we get some sleep. But girl,
girl,
I'll make love to you the best I can. But it's not gonna last real long.
Honesty.
Well, I apologize in advance. I can probably give you 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
If you don't move around too much. Otherwise, I'll probably give you 4 minutes.
4 minutes.
Cause when you move, I get excited, girl. And hey,
hey,
is it cool if I leave my shirt on, girl? Cause I just had a big dinner.
Boston Market.
And I'm struggling with some negative body issues. Girl, I would love nothing more than to make sweet honey dip love to you till the break of dawn. But unfortunately, sex is something that I'm just not very good at. So please, girl, just try not to laugh at me, no matter how awkward this gets. Girl,
girl,
let's talk sexual positions, girl. I hope you like the missionary.
Tried and true.
Cause that's the only one that I'm really comfortable with. And girl, just one more quick little thing, girl. Please feel free to fake an orgasm.
I won't know.
Cause that'll make me feel like I'm doing well. Oh, girl.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
This is going to be a nice morbid discussion, but I will tell you this. I never really thought about death until maybe the last year or two. And I've known so many people who never even made it as far as I have so far. And that sort of freaks me out. And then my grandfather, when I was a kid growing up on the southwest side of Chicago, my grandfather owned the house and we lived upstairs and he lived downstairs and there were separate entrances. He had a heart attack and died at 72. And maybe it's because I was only 10 years old, but he seemed like he was ancient. But now I look at pictures and he was ancient. Something has happened to the point where, you know, people who are in their 70s and even early 80s don't look like it anymore. And it's got to be more than just hair and makeup and stuff like that, clothing. But the thing about it is my grandfather looked 72 as far back as I could even remember. So when they say, you know, 70 is the new 60 and 80 is the new 70, I agree with that. For some people, there are some people I know, especially guys, who have been old men their entire lives. I know guys right now who are in their late 20s, and they might as well be 85 because they have old thoughts, old thinking. Get these guys who get out of college. They never have any interest in ever traveling anywhere or living someplace else or just experiencing life on some other level other than what they have right there in their backyard in Herculaneum. And I'm not picking on Herculaneum. That's not the point. You got the big Cub Cardinals series starting this afternoon. I know people who've lived their entire lives in St. Louis are in their, you know, 40s, 50s, whatever the case may be, have never even been to Chicago. And I'm saying that more than because that's where I'm from. I'm just talking about the fact that, you know, you're 5 hours away from one of the major metropolitan areas and all the cultural stuff and the plays and the concerts and the scenery and the architecture and just the whole experience of being in a major city as opposed to being in some place like St. Louis, which unfortunately has been on the downslide for a long time. You know, I will tell you this. When I first got into the business professionally in the mid-1970s, there was this little book that used to come out once a year. And you would flip the pages in this thing, and it would provide you with a snapshot of every major American city. And I think they did about 200 markets. So everything from Chicago, Los Angeles, and L.A. all the way down to, St. Cloud, Minnesota, or something like that. So I think they took like the first 200 markets. And it gave you a real good synopsis because you're young and you haven't traveled. You don't know anything. And some job opportunity opens up in Grand Rapids, and you're like, I've never been to Grand Rapids. I have no idea whether I would even like it there. And you could flip open this book, and you could read about two pages that give you a great synopsis of Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you go, okay, that sounds pretty bad, but I'll go anyhow because the money's good, and I need the experience. I'm building a resume here. But the other thing you could find out is how big the city was, because you didn't have the internet back then, and I didn't spend a lot of time in libraries, so I needed somebody to tell me, you know, how big is this city? Because what you're doing when you're coming up in broadcasting, you're always trying to go to a larger market. So for me, you know, I started out in a little suburb of Chicago, then I went to Rockford, Illinois, then I went to Flint, Michigan, and then I went to Chicago after that. But then I wanted to change my whole career. I wanted to change the way I was doing things. And I'm like, I almost have to start over again. So that's how I ended up in Fort Wayne, Indiana. But that springboarded me into the massive metroplex of Lansing, Michigan. But I went there because it was a college town. And I had only been out of college a couple of years. And I thought that would have sort of been fun. And in fact, I was there when Magic Johnson was there for his senior year at Michigan State. So I got to see that up close and personal. But the point is this, I remember reading the pages about St. Louis, and it sounded really cool. I'm figuring, okay, well, I'm from Chicago. It's 5 hours away to St. Louis. It's the Midwest. I think that would be fun. And I remember reading, I think at the time, St. Louis was something like the 13th largest market in the country. I still think I have that book stuffed away somewhere. It would be fun to go dig that up, and I'm going to try to do that. I'm going to try to dig that up and then read to you what the thing says. Keep in mind, this is something that was published in, 1975. But just think about it. It was like market 13 or 18. But I just remember thinking to myself, that's a pretty big city. Where are we now? Depending on who you talk to. I mean, for most of the time I was in St. Louis, it was market 18, 19, or 20. And I can tell you this, it was the mid-2000s when St. Louis fell out of the top 20, and it impacted us immediately because, you know, we have all these agencies and stuff like that that we were in contact with that would provide us not only with guest stars for the show, but also there were national promotions and things like that. And it was very simple. They said, okay, we have enough money for the top 20 markets. Go ahead and go. Well, if you're not in the top 20 markets, you don't get any of that stuff. Our ability to secure major interviews dropped considerably, and it's all because we fell out of the top 20. But the founding fathers of St. Louis, they're going to go down with the ship. There's no question about that. And when we were all kids, you know, doing Party Town on the banks of the Mississippi River in front of the old beat-up Admiral with that big banner on there, and we're broadcasting live, I remember thinking to myself, looking out at all of those kids. These are the kids that are going to finally change this city. They're going to bring this city into prominence. This is the crowd right here. Well, a funny thing happened on the way to the 2000s, and that is that most of the kids just turned into their parents. I remember having this conversation with Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I was like, yeah, it's like 1969, and you guys are, you know, doing the whole peace, love, revolution, got to change this world to something better, and we got to start concentrating on things like friendship and love and all of that cool stuff. And something happened along the way, and all these kids now are listening to Rush Limbaugh. What the fuck happened? He didn't have much of an explanation either, and neither do I. But that falling out of the top 20, that was a big deal. That was a big deal. Now, some agencies will take top 25. We're about to fall out of that too. because I think we're number 24 now. So think about that. Just in the time that I've been in St. Louis, we dropped from 18 when I got here to 24 now. It's also affected the quality of the news that you get primarily on television, and even the level of talent you get on radio, but it's especially evident in television. It used to be, if you wanted to work at Channel 5 back in 1985, you had to have worked in at least two or three jobs on the way to St. Louis. Now you can get a job at Channel 5 almost fresh out of college, and it looks like it too. You know, it wasn't so bad 30 or 40 years ago because you would sit down in front of the camera and you would read the news. Well, now all of the newscasters all have to be personalities too. In fact, Channel 5 sent all of their anchor people, all of the people who read the news, the morning show, the midday, the afternoon, the night, well, they sent them basically to school, to classes, to learn how to extemporize. Basically, they were improvisation classes. Somebody says this, you say this. We're trying to be sort of funny here. We read the news, but then when the news is over and you have to toss it from this guy to the weather guy to the sports guy, we would like something entertaining to happen. It used to be, and now with the sports, here's Bob. Now it's like, hey, Bob, those Cardinals, Fred Bird should put on a nurse's outfit because we've got so many injuries. You know, that kind of crap. And then the sports guy has to say, well, yes. So you're picturing Fred Bird in a nurse's outfit? Is there anything you want to tell us, Rick? Now, that was funny, and I just made that up off the top of my head. These dolts on TV, they can't do it. They're too young. They're too inexperienced. And we are the lucky recipients. Now you throw in the national reputation that was, you know, pretty much sealed when Ferguson happened. And every year the crime stats come out. They come out twice a year. The crime stats come out. And every year city government leaders stand there in front of the microphone of the TV cameras and give you some cock and bull explanation as to why the sampling was wrong or people don't actually come here and they don't know what a great place it is and blah, 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 blah. All I know is this. It used to be you could get shot downtown. Then you could get shot in the Central West End going to a parking lot at midnight trying to pick up your car. Now people are getting shot in parking lots in Creve Coeur. And you got gunfights going on in the city of St. Louis. What was it, a 17 and a 23-year-old? They're driving along. I think they were driving on Market Street. And a guy pops up out of the sunroof of the SUV and fires a few shots at a police car. And now there's a high-speed chase going down Market Street. The cops are chasing him. Everything's going on. And they finally caught the guys. They're shooting at cops. And I decided when I launched the podcast, I wasn't going to do much politics. That is not to say I won't do any. But here's the thing. If you have a big traffic problem in your city, you would not add more cars. We have a gun problem. Adding more guns makes as much sense as adding more cars to solve a traffic problem. Well, this isn't the time to have that discussion. Well, when is? And I'm fine, by the way, with somebody saying, well, you know, it's not guns that kill people, it's people that kill people. Okay, fine. But tell me what your plan is. You can't just say, guns don't kill people, people kill people, and then turn around and walk away. Give me that line, and then tell me, okay, what do we do then? Tell me what your plan is. But just don't go, no, I'm done, and will you walk away? Because then you're not really trying to look for a solution. You're not trying to help. You just love your gun more than you love law and order, which is interesting because every Republican runs on a platform of law and order. I used to tell people that I used to understand things, but now I say I thought that I used to understand things. It's very clear to me now that all that time I thought I understood things, I didn't understand shit because here we are in 2021. And I don't get any of this. I just don't get it anymore. But this weekend we have baseball in Chicago.
And here he is, the Hall of Fame voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, Jack Buck, with our seventh inning stretch.
Broadcaster Jack Buck.
Hi, folks. How you doing? How do you like the color of this jacket? It's the Cardinals and the Cubs. I never thought I would ever do this Let's sing this song for the greatest rivalry in the history of baseball. The Cardinals and the Cubs. A one, a two, a three. Take me out to the ballpark. Take me out with the crowd. I know some peanuts in quiet. I don't care if I will ever get back to that big room, room, room. For the Cardinals, if they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out. And the old call.
Very much looking forward to this weekend's games. Cubs-Cardinals, we'll talk more about that in the aftermath next week. Got a couple of anniversaries here I wanted to mention. It was 1993 that Y98 Radio got fined a couple of $1,000s by the FCC. They used to have a character on the show, but the character was voiced by one of the people on the show. But they tried to make it seem like that guy was real. And one day they came along and they said, we're sorry to say he died. And they planted an obituary in the paper and everything. And the Post-Dispatch called up and said, wait a minute. We thought that this guy, this character on the show, was just one of you doing the voices. Oh, no, no, he was absolutely real. He was real. He's passed away. He's got a family and a whole thing. And they go ahead and they run the story, only to find out that it was a hoax and that Y98 had been making it up all the time. That's what's called a very, very lame attempt at doing something to get your attention. On this date, 1998, I spent an entire afternoon at the Wolf Sanctuary out in, I guess it's Eureka, with Jack Hanna. It's the guy who used to go on Letterman all the time with all the animals, and something catastrophic would almost always take place. But you find out very, very quickly when you meet Jack Hanna and you spend a couple of hours with him, he is as serious as a heart attack. He's not fucking around. This Wolf Sanctuary, this animal thing, is dead serious for him, and he wasn't that guy on Letterman's show, and I wasn't prepared for that, and I was trying to get him to be silly, and he was not interested in being silly. On this date in 2003, John Hewlett and I pulled off a promotion called Yanks and Beans. Yanks and Beans. So here's what happened. The Cardinals were doing interleague play against the New York Yankees. And, by the way, it was the night that Roger Clemens was going after win number 3,000. Now, I have a friend who was basically the real-life George Costanza, George Steinbrenner's personal assistant, and this guy I went to college with. His name is Rick Cerrone. And it's not the Rick Cerrone who was the catcher for the Yankees, a different Rick Cerrone. And I called him up, and I said, look, we're coming to New York. And he's like, come on, I'll put you in the press box. And went out to dinner and everything like that, rumming around the field, got a tour of the ball. Park, all of that stuff. So we did that, saw Roger Clemens win his 3,000th, and we were there for a couple of nights, and then we got on the train, and that was really cool because we went on a train all the way to Boston for the other half of the interleague play, thus the Yanks and Beans, get it? And we were broadcasting out of a studio that Bill O'Reilly frequently broadcast out of. You know, he and Zip Rezepa, the former Channel 2 and Channel 4 sportscaster, are very, very good friends. I think they went to college together. And I think somebody at this radio station tipped everybody off as to what my relationship was with Bill O'Reilly. And so they're like, don't let these two in the same studio at the same time put up a divide of some sort. Keep them away from one another. But that was fun. It was fun taking the train, too. On this date in 2009, I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland for the second or third time. And we've talked about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame here on the podcast and how it's a really good idea to spend at least 2 days up there. Or if you're going to spend one because you can't afford it, get there early, leave late, but for God's sakes, give yourself at least an hour to hit the gift shop because it is absolutely massive. You'll want to buy one of everything they have there, and you know, obviously you have to prioritize, but it takes at least an hour, maybe even two, if you're going to really get a good look at everything in that gift shop. And of course you want to spend as much time as possible in the actual Rock Hall itself. Sirajul and Mujibur from David Letterman Show were in St. Louis on this date in 1995. They were doing Pants Across America. They were in their black suits, and it was about 106. The humidity was about 5,000%, and these two guys are in those signature black suits, white shirts, and black ties. And Mujibur, in real life, exactly the way he was on the show. Always trying to push Sirajul out of the way and make him stand behind him and stuff like that. Mujibur just had this idea that he was some sort of star, that he was the lead guy. This weekend is the anniversary of the O.J. murders back in 1994. Here is the conversation. I think the guy was Tom Van Natter. I believe that was the guy who was on the two-way radio with O.J., who was in the car while Al Cowlings is driving down the 405. People are standing on the overpasses cheering. I'll live to be 300, never understand that. Oh, you chopped the heads off of two people. Way to go. Go, O.J. Go, O.J. Listen to this. It runs about 4 minutes. And ask yourself, if this sounds like somebody who didn't do it.
Let me get to my house.
Okay, we're going to do that.
I swear to you, I'll give you my whole body.
Okay.
I just need to get to my house.
Okay.
We're
going to do that. Just throw the gun out the window.
I can't do that.
We're not going to bother you. We're going to let you go up there. Just throw it out the window. Please, you're scaring everybody. OJ, you there?
This is for me. This is not to keep you guys away from me. This
I know
is for
that.
Me.
Nobody's going to hurt
this
you.
This is for me.
Okay, it's for you. I know that, but do it
this
for you.
This is for me, for me.
I
That's
know
all.
That. I know that, but do it for the kids, too, will you?
No.
Think of your kids.
No.
Please, just toss it out. You're scaring everybody, man.
I'm not going to hurt anybody.
I know you're not going to hurt anybody.
I need
but
it for me.
I know you're
gonna,
not, man.
I'm just going to go with me.
Please, you're scaring everybody, though. You're scared.
Just tell them I'm all sorry. You can tell them later on today and tomorrow that I was sorry. And that I'm sorry that I did this to the police department.
Listen, I think you should tell them yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to have to tell your kids that. Your kids need you.
I've already said goodbye to my kids.
Listen, no, we're not going to say goodbye to your kids. You're going to see them again.
Uh-huh.
You want to see them again. Please, you're scaring us. You're scaring them. Please, man.
Hey, you've been a good guy, too, man. Let
Thanks,
me tell you, I know you're doing your job. You went
I appreciate
honest with me right
that.
From the beginning. I'm just saying you're doing your job.
Listen.
I know you do a good job.
Okay, thank you. But there's a lot of people that love you. Don't throw it all away. Don't throw it all away.
I can't take this.
Oh, yes, you can. Yes, you can.
I can't.
You got your whole family out here.
I can't.
They love you, man. Don't throw this away. Don't do this. They love you. Don't do it, OJ. It's going to work itself out. It's going to work. It's going to work. You're listening to me. I know you. And you're thinking about your kids right now, aren't you? Aren't you? They're thinking about you. They're thinking about you. So is your mother. Your mother loves you. Everybody loves you. Don't do this. I know you're thinking. Man, just throw it out the window. And nobody's going to get hurt.
I'm the only one that deserves.
No, you don't deserve that.
I'm gonna get hurt.
You do not deserve to get hurt. You do not deserve to get hurt. Don't do this.
All I did was love Nicole. All I did was love her.
I understand.
I love everybody. I tried to show everybody my whole life that I love everybody.
We know that. And everybody loves you. Especially your family, your mother, your kids, all of your friends, AC. Everybody does. Don't do this. Just put it down or throw it out the window. And this will all go away. It's going to be a lot better tomorrow, believe me. Please. We'll let you go up to the house, but we need you to throw that out the window.
Yeah.
We'll let you go up there, but we need you to throw the gun out the window. Please.
You see them take it from me when I get home.
What? If you throw it out the window, they're not going to have to do that. Okay? Hello? OJ, you still there?
Yeah, Jay, it's Tom again.
Why hang it up? Hey, it's going to be better tomorrow. Get rid of the gun. Toss it, please. Too many people love you, man. Don't give it all up. Don't hurt everybody. You're going to hurt everybody.
I'm just going to leave. I'm
no,
just going to
don't.
Go with Nicole. That's all I'm going to do. That's all
hey,
I'm
listen,
trying to do.
Think about everybody
I
else, all right?
I couldn't do it on a freeway. I couldn't do it in a field. I want to do it at a grave. I want to do it at my house.
You're not going
to
do anything. Too many people love you. Your kids, your mother, your friends, AC, everybody. You got the whole world. Don't throw it away.
Yeah.
Don't throw it away, man. Come on. OJ? Hello? OJ, it's Tom again. How you doing?
You just tell them at my house. I know they're all over the place with guns.
They're not going to do
it. Let them know I'm not coming there to hurt any of them.
Okay, they know that, and they don't want to hurt you. You going to go to the house?
That's where I told you we weren't. You know, you just let them all know. You let the police know. You let them all know. I wasn't running.
I know you weren't running.
I
know you weren't running.
I was trying to go to Nicole's grave.
I know you weren't running.
And now
I know you weren't, man, but you got everybody scared.
Yeah.
You got us all scared with a gun, man.
Yeah, and I'm sorry I made the police look bad by not going up.
Hey, we don't care. That's not a problem. You know what the important thing is here? Is that you don't hurt everybody and break their hearts.
I'm not going to hurt anybody.
You're going to break somebody's heart is what you're going to do.
I know if I hurt somebody, I'm not going to hurt
anybody. And I'm talking your mother and I'm talking your kids. Don't do this. Just toss it, man. Come on.
You've been around me even the few days you've been around me, and you know I'm not going to hurt
you.
Anybody.
That's where you're right. I do know. And you're better than that. You're not going to do this.
Sounds innocent to me. Hard to believe that cocksucker is still roaming the earth, playing golf, living in the sunshine. Nobody ever said life was fair. Which brings us to the issue of another guy who checked out on this date. Actually, it's the 13th. It's Sunday. And in 2008, I remember I was getting a quick little nap. I'm going to say it was like a Thursday afternoon or something. And about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I was just getting ready to pick up my daughters from school. And it was sort of, you know, half in and out. I had the TV on. And I'm sort of awake and asleep. And I wake up. And Tom Brokaw is sitting there talking about the fact that Tim Russert had a heart attack, collapsed in the newsroom, and had passed away. This guy was the real deal. The whole family was the real deal. He used to talk about the fact that when he was very, very young, you know, 5 or 6 years old, something like that, that his father, who was a garbage man, drove Tim Russert and the garbage truck to an area along the motorcade and then put Tim, young Tim, up on top of the garbage truck so he could watch JFK. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was going through the streets of Buffalo, and he wanted him to get a look. His father was working 2 jobs as a garbage man to have enough money to put Tim through college, did, and the rest is sort of history. Again, life not being fair. And we could really use a guy like Tim Russert around here these days.
Hey, Tim, when you watch somebody like Daryl Hammond of Saturday Night Live doing an imitation like that, do you say to yourself, he's really got me? Or do you go up to him, you see him in the hallway, you go, see, no, you're holding your hands the wrong way. I actually sit with my elbow, you know, stuff like that.
Well, I find it funny, but my son finds it a whole lot funnier. So I guess it's not dead on.
Yeah. I got to ask you about something from last week, too. You did the Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And
yes.
We looked at the rundown. It was Tim Russert and also Jeff Foxworthy, Larry the Cable Guy, and Bill Engvall from Blue Collar TV. And all we kept thinking about is, with Tim Russert, what the hell is going on in that green room? What was that conversation like backstage?
Hey, I'm a blue-collar journalist. Get her done.
And that takes care of that. All right. So, oh, by the way, you talked about your son, and I want you to tell this story because we had a discussion on the air unrelated to this about tattoos yesterday. Mm. And your son goes away to, I believe it was Boston College, and you had warned him, don't get any tattoos. They're dangerous. Just watch out. And he comes back for the first time, comes back home, takes off his shirt, and there's a tattoo. But tell the story that goes with it.
Well, I had written a book about my dad, Big Russ and me, and my son read it, about how my dad left the school in 10th grade to fight in World War II and terribly hurt in a plane crash and came home and worked 2 full-time jobs as a sanitation man and a truck driver to help educate myself and my 3 sisters. And I hope my son would draw from that book those lasting lessons of life of hard work and preparation and dedication, accountability. And I didn't know until Christmas Eve 2004, and he took off his shirt as we were getting ready for bed, and I said, "What is that?" He said, "What?" And he had his arms locked down. I said, "Lift up your arm." And he got all misty-eyed, and I saw on the side he had TJR. My dad's initials are Timothy. Dad's name is Timothy Joseph Russert. My name is Timothy John Russert. And all of a sudden, in little purple stencil, I saw it. And I said, "Luke." And he said, "Dad, after I read your book, I always wanted you and Grandpa on my side." It hit me pretty hard, and I said, "You know, that's the nicest tattoo I'd ever seen."
Yeah. But
the fact is, we were bonded by blood and then bonded by a book and now bonded by a tattoo. But for me, it was an affirmation that he really understood that I stand on my dad's shoulders and I hope Luke stands on mine. And we're just trying to get this thing right. And that's what Wisdom of Our Fathers does. I think it's a roadmap for new dads, how to see the world through the eyes of sons and daughters, and a way to say thank you to dads who've been around for a while. So, I remember my dad used to say to me, when I was acting out, someday you'll thank me for this. I hope this Sunday when I give my dad a copy of this, he's going to say, you know, that day's finally here. I really appreciate it. But what I have found is that this has been an amazing journey for me. It's so different than politics and what I normally do. I never expected it or anticipated it. But what I have found is that after I wrote A Big Russ and Me, people perceived it as an invitation to talk about their dads. And 60,000 of them wrote letters and emails. And I read them all, and I decided they should be remembered. And so I've compiled them into this book. And so I've been kind of surprised that as I go around the country, I anticipate people would want to talk to me about Iraq and immigration and so forth. And they don't. They want to talk about their dads. And they want to talk about how it's not the expensive vacation or the material gift. It's being there at the right moment, the right time. It's not quality time. It's day in and day out. It's hard work. It's example. A friend of mine who read Wisdom of Our Fathers sent me a note the other day saying, you know, the lesson from this book is that it's a whole lot better to watch a sermon than it is to hear one. Mm. And that's what our dads do. They show us how to get it right, how to live our lives.
Has anybody ever intimidated you on the show and as somebody who you were leery about interviewing?
Well, the toughest interview I ever had was 1992 with Ross Perot. And he was ahead of Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush in the polls. And he came on and said, I'm going to balance the budget without breaking a sweat. I'm going to get under the hood and fix all the problems. I said, you know, you've identified the problem, Mr. Perot, but what's your solution? He said, what? I said, you're running for president. What's your solution? Are you going to raise taxes? Are you going to cut programs? He said, now then, if you were going to ask me those trick questions, I wouldn't have come on your program.
Let me finish.
Yeah. It's your program. Go ahead. You know. So I got on a flight to New York, and the flight attendant ran down the aisle. She said, man, that Perot interview was unbelievable. What do you think of him? And I said, ma'am, I'm not someone like on talk radio or cable TV. I remain objective. I'm not sharing my views, but I, as a viewer, as a voter, as a flight attendant, what do you think of Ross Perot? And she looked at me and she said, he strikes me as the kind of guy that would never return his tray table to the upright position.
We are talking with Tim Russert from Meet the Press and NBC News. And what are people saying to you about the political climate while you're on this book tour? I know you said a lot of people just want to talk about their dads, but I'm sure you're talking some politics too. And you're getting into areas that you don't normally see. Traveling to the St. Louis's and the Dallas's and the Denver's and places like that, promoting the book. And when people do talk politics with you and talk about, you know, where this country is going and the stress that the war and gasoline prices and stuff like that, what are they saying to you?
Why is it so poisonous? Hmm. Why do people not sit down and talk to one another? They understand that you need a strong Democratic Party and a strong Republican Party, and they should be philosophical differences, but they don't understand the level of animosity and rancor. And I remember, you know, conservative Barry Goldwater debating liberal Hubert Humphrey and then going off and have a cup of coffee or something stronger together just to try to find common ground. And that's what they can't figure out. Iraq, they know, is a big challenge for our country, and gas prices and immigration. And they know there's not a Democratic solution, a Republican solution, or liberal conservative solutions. It's an American problem that's going to take all of us working together. And they are just perplexed as to why politicians seem to go to Washington and forget all the lessons that I try to write about in Wisdom of Our Fathers. What did their fathers teach them? Why have they gone there and they're not grounded? They're not remembering who they are and where they came from. It's pretty striking. It's been uniform all across the country. That's the message I'm getting.
All right, Wisdom of Our Fathers, published by Random House, $22.95. Thanks for spending a little time with us here in St. Louis, Tim.
Happy Father's Day, everybody.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.